Welcome to September's Library Chat, the monthly podcast by the Iowa Library for the Blind and Print Disabled, where we chat about books and podcasts with library staff and guests. I'm Sarah Williford, Library Director. Here with me today for our episode are some familiar voices if you listen to our library podcast. Denise Bean, our Youth Services Librarian.
Hi, it's great to be here.
Leslie Heinzler, our Special Services Librarian.
Hello.
And Tyler Sweat, our Accessible Media Specialist.
Hey.
So thanks, everybody, for filling in for me last month. I was bummed I missed last month's topic, and you guys did a great job.
So it was a little bit shorter.
Yeah. You were missed.
Yeah.
You were missed.
We noticed.
I wasn't here to chat on and on. I do have to say, I thought of you guys when I was out and last month's topic, because you talked about summer and beach reads when I was on my trip, which was kind of a vacation for the most part. And I've been known to save books for the summer because I think they'll be the perfect, like, vacation mm-hmm. read. Mm-hmm. But I have to tell you, the one I saved for this trip turned out to be a Curious. So I saved because for some reason I had in my head it would be a great opportunity to read Abominable by Dan Simmons mm-hmm. for the trip. And it was a little creepy. I was on a plane a lot and in an airport. It was just it gave me an odd vibe
the whole day,
time. Just a little bit about the book. It's about 1924, the race to the summit of Mount Everest is paused because of a disappearance of two famous mountain climbers. And by the following year, though, three climbers find a way to take their shot at the top by helping out another individual who went missing at the same time. His mother doesn't believe he's dead. So she hires them to go up to see what happened and just kind of to verify that he was killed on Mount Everest. So deep in Tibet, on a high on Everest, the climbers, they find themselves being pursued through the night by someone or something. So
mm-hmm. that does sound there. Good.
But his books are always based in his true, mm-hmm. I mean, history, and then he adds this little kind of
the Abominable twist. Snowman to throw in on top. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm not sure how that would have fit into your beach reads discussion, but it did give I will always remember that's the book I read when we went on our trip. Leslie's going to kind of get us started leading up to today's topic.
Yeah. So there is a lot going on this month for libraries and books. September is Library Card Sign-Up Month. Since 1987, Library Card Sign-Up Month has been held each September to mark the beginning of the school year. During the month, the American Library Association, also known as ALA, and libraries unite together in a national effort to ensure every child signs up for their own library card. Marley Diaz, author and executive producer and founder of 1000 Black Girl Books, is taking on a new role. Actually, that is #signed. Or #, sorry, I'm showing my age there.
Wow. Mount sign. I like that.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Wow, okay. Founder of #1000 Black Girl Books is taking on a new role as honorary chair of Library Card Sign-Up Month. This September, DS will join the ALA and libraries nationwide in promoting the power of a library card. So DS is the witty and purpose-driven 16-year-old founder of #1000 Black Girl Books and author of Marley Diaz Gets It Done, and So Can You. It's DB90058. #1000 Black Girl Books is an international movement to collect and donate children's books that feature black girls as the lead character. So as honorary chair, she will remind the public that signing up for a library card provides access to technology, multimedia content, and educational programming that transforms lives and strengthens communities. A library card is the ticket you need to travel across the globe. It allows you to experience stories that connect you to diverse and empowering experiences, said DS. So, here are some library facts for you guys. Did you know the Library of Congress is the largest library in the world, with more than 167 million items on approximately 838 miles of bookshelves?
Wow.
Which would span roughly the distance from the Library of Congress in Washington, D.C. to Cape Canaveral in Florida.
Man,
That's a long way. Yeah,
it's a long way.
Wow. Manage those stacks.
Yeah. Manage them. Weed that collection.
It could take time. Yeah, weed that.
Did you know that a growing body of evidence suggests that students' academic success is linked to library usage, including improved student retention and an enhanced academic experience? Makes sense.
It makes good sense.
Did you know that libraries play a critical role in the happiness of Americans? Communities that spend more on libraries, parks, and highways are shown to support the well-being of community members. And did you know Americans go to public libraries more often than they go to the movies?
Oh,
I like that.
Yeah, it's a good one.
And there are more public libraries than Starbucks in the U.S., a total of 16,568, including the branches. Nearly 100% of public libraries provide Wi-Fi and have no fee access to computers. There are 16,568 total libraries, including branches in the U.S., per the 2016 public library survey.
Some have free coffee.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that'd be nice. Better than a Starbucks.
Yes.
So, do you guys remember when you got your first library card?
I do. I was, and you know what? They gave you a sleeve. You had an actual sleeve that you could put your library card into. And I remember how cool it was to see your name on the library card. And, you know, it's like, oh my gosh, is that my name on it? And you go in and use your library card. But this was years ago, I'd say 40 some years ago, mm-hmm. for when I got my first library card. They probably do it so differently now, but I remember. I used it to go check out a book, and they'd say if you're late on a book coming back, then use your library card. Oh, yeah, pretty neat.
Like, I remember vaguely. It was paper.
Yes, now, that's what I remember, too.
Paper and a sleeve.
It was a tiny little rectangle. It wasn't very big. Mm-hmm. My mom kept it in her wallet. She kept ours in her wallet for us, so I didn't get to...
Yeah.
See, mine was plastic, and it had like a hologram on it, yeah. And you get like scrape. You know that scraping noise and like the wave. That's what all my brother would do with it all the time. It's just scrape it, and like because it made a funny noise. So that's what I remember from getting a library card.
I just remember I want to say it was yellow.
I think mine was like a coral color, like peach. But that's all. I don't honestly. I don't really remember.
I feel like they had to type, like, typewriter, type my name on it.
Mm-hmm. That sounds right.
Oh, wow.
And I don't remember signing it. I don't think that was a thing. And back in the day.
Back in the day.
40 plus years ago.
Yeah. So I didn't get a sleeve.
I got a sleeve. It's a pretty fancy library, I guess. It's pretty fancy.
And I don't remember if you could check books out without it. I could have just told them my name.
I could, just because it was a smaller library and they knew who I was. And they knew who my mom was, but...
I think, yeah, you had to have your card, I think.
I had to have my card.
I think they just typed in my name.
The library we went to wasn't in a location. Well, it's still not. That you could walk to. So nobody was... walking to it. It's off of a really busy street. How do you even buy a neighborhood now that I think about it? So I wouldn't have been able to get there by myself. Somebody was driving me.
Needed a ride.
So we always all clambered into the car and went. Now that I think about it, I wonder if they thought there'd be houses around there someday. There's a skate land. So also this month is the 2021 Library of Congress National Book Festival. It is a virtual format this year that lets us, so you can kind of create your own festival experience from programs in a range of formats. It's kind of amazing. And it's an expanded schedule. It's over 10 days, so it starts September 17th through September 26th. The lineup includes authors, poets, illustrators from America and around the world. The theme is Open a Book, Open the World. And it actually kicked off last night. Oh, yeah. Last night on PBS with a premiere hosted by LeVar Burton. And the program just offered kind of what's coming up, and they interviewed different authors, I believe. And I think if you missed it last night, there's if you go to the website at loc.gov is where all the information is for the National Book Festival. I think there's a recording, was my understanding. But also for the first time this year, NPR is going to be producing and distributing a series of podcast interviews with the authors. And they're also collaborating with PBS Books on the programming that's going to be produced by the Detroit Public Television. That's going to be doing different specials during the festival. So, again, check out the listing. There's podcasts, there's stuff on TV, there's recordings, and it's at loc.gov. And also part of this, I just want to mention, because there's Iowa Tie, the National Book Festival also highlights great reads from great places. So each state submitted a title to represent their state. And our book in Iowa is selected by the Iowa Center for the Book. And the book, kind of the criteria is it has to be written by an author from the state, take place in the state, or celebrate the state's culture and heritage. And this year, Iowa selected the title Grasshopper Jungle by Andrew Smith. And here's just a little blurb about it. So, Austin and Robbie didn't exactly mean to start the end of the world here in Ealing, Iowa, but that's what happens when they unleash an army of 6-foot-tall praying mantises. And now this is the truth. This is history, and nobody knows anything about it.
Interesting.
That does sound. So the name definitely. Of that. Take a peek and see what's going on and who's being interviewed.
Yeah, that sounds cool.
It's cool. Usually it's done in Washington, and like Iowa would have a tent, and they'd have different things. Each state gets a tent, and there's the author things on different stages. But just this year it'll be virtual. So
wait, what a cool! I mean, just that agenda alone, the podcast being generated from this, it's really cool.
So that leads to our topic for this month and the other kind of event that's taking place in September, and that's Banned Books. So Banned Books Week is September 26th through October 2nd. It's an annual event celebrating the freedom to read and spotlights current and historical attempts to censor books in libraries and schools. It brings together the entire book community, librarians, booksellers, publishers, journalists, teachers, and readers of all types, in a shared support of the freedom to seek and to express ideas, even though some consider unorthodox or unpopular. So here's a little bit from the Banned Books Week Coalition. They are proud to announce that Jason Reynolds has been named the inaugural honorary chair for Banned Books Week 2021. New York Times bestselling author will headline the annual celebration of the right to read. Reynolds is the author of more than a dozen books for young people. He's also a National Book Award finalist and has received a Newbery Honor, a Prince Honor, an NAACP Image Award, and several Coretta Scott King Award honors. He's also serving a 2-year term as the National Ambassador for Young People's Literature for the Library of Congress. As an advocate for storytelling and an outspoken critic of censorship, he says, for young people in particular, books offer both shared and differently lived experiences that help them develop empathy and understand themselves and their world. In turn, censorship isolates us from each other by narrowing our view of the world. And just a FYI, spoiler, Reynolds will show up on the banned books list we're going to talk about shortly as well. Just kind of jump into our book portion, since it is Banned Books Week. Every year, the Office for Intellectual Freedom, a part of the American Library Association, compiles a list of the 10 most challenged books of the previous year. The ALA Office for Intellectual Freedom tracked 156 challenges to library, school, and university materials and services in 2020. Of the 273 books that were targeted, here are the most challenged, along with the reasons cited for censoring the books. So just really quickly, challenge is a formal request for a book to be removed, and banned is when the challenge is successful at removing the book. So if you're wondering why challenge, why banned, what's going on, that's kind of why. So Leslie actually pulled together the 10 books for us. So let me just jump in.
Sure, go for it.
Okay, do we want to start with 10 or number 1?
Is it in order of amount of complaints?
I believe.
I think so.
We better start with number 10 then.
10, yeah.
Let's go to a different paper. All right. So number 10 was The Hate U Give by Angie Thomas. So it was challenged for profanity, and it was sought to promote an anti-police message. And just a little bit about this book. It's a William C. Morris Award winner, National Book Award long list, Prince Honor Book, and a Coretta Scott King Honor Book.
Wow.
My daughter, who is 14, loves this book. She has her own copy, and I think she's read it at least 4 times. She just loves, well, she loves Angie Thomas in general, but The Hate U Give is especially one of her favorites. Mm-hmm. She loves it, so. I haven't read it personally.
I have not read it. And I know there's a movie.
Yep. Yeah. My wife taught that one in English class. Mm-hmm. My wife's an English teacher, so yeah, she taught it last year. And that, so she said the kids actually like got into it.
That age.
You know, yeah, because it really relates to that age group. Yeah.
Yeah.
And conversations that we should be having.
Right.
Correct.
Should be.
Right. So number 9 is The Bluest Eye by Toni Morrison. It was banned and challenged because it was considered sexually explicit and depicts child sexual abuse. It's a Nobel Prize winner, Toni Morrison, powerfully examines our obsession with beauty and conformity and asks questions about race, class, and gender with her characteristics subtly.
That's a seashore went to the seashore thing.
I'm adding bees.
It's hard to read.
Subtly. And grace. This was actually Morrison's best-selling first novel. And I have read that.
I have read that, too. It is good. Very good.
Number 8 of Mice and Men by John Steinbeck.
It's a classic.
It was banned and challenged for racial slurs and racist stereotypes and their negative effects on students. Keep going.
I think, was it Mice of Men I read that they first tried to ban it in 1977. Like the Ku Klux Klan was a group that tried to ban that book in certain school districts for a while. Like they were the ones doing a push based on that book. Hmm. Yeah, which I thought was very intriguing.
Interesting.
Hmm. Yeah.
Number 7 is To Kill a Mockingbird by Harper Lee. So, just so we remember, this was voted America's Best Loved Novel in the PBS The Great American Read recently, Pulitzer Prize winning. It was banned and challenged for racial slurs and their negative effect on students, featuring a quote-unquote white savior character and its perception of the black experience. That's a great book.
I think everybody's read that one. I don't think if you can't really get out of high school without reading that one, I think.
Yep.
Great.
Number 6 is Something Happened in Our Town, a Child's Story About Racial Injustice by Marianne Solano, Marietta Collins, and Anne Hazard. It was illustrated by Jennifer Zivon. It was challenged for divisive language and because it was thought to promote anti-police views. So it's a picture book. Something Happened in Our Town follows two families, one white, one black, as they discuss a police shooting of a black man in their community. The story aims to answer children's questions about such traumatic events and to help children identify and counter racial injustice in their own lives. One of the things that was highlighted in some of the reviews was also the extensive note to parents and caregivers with guidelines for discussing race and racism with children and child-friendly definitions and sample dialogues.
Hmm. Sounds like a good one to start conversations.
Mm-hmm. Hard conversations.
Yeah. Number 5, The Absolutely True Diary of a Part-Time Indian by Sherman Alexie. It was banned and challenged for profanity, sexual references, and allegations of sexual misconduct by the author. The story of Junior, a budding cartoonist growing up on the Spokane Indian Reservation, determined to take his future into his own hands, Junior leaves his troubled school on the res to attend an all-white farm town high school, where the only other Indian is the school mascot. It is based on the author's own experiences, coupled with poignant drawings by Ellen Forney that reflect the character's art. I've read that one. It's very good.
My wife taught that one, too. That was when she taught last year, so yeah.
Number 4, Speak by Laurie Halsley Anderson. It was banned, challenged, and restricted because it was thought to contain a political viewpoint, and it was claimed to be biased against male students and for the novel's inclusion of rape and profanity. So here's a little bit about it. Freshman year, Meriwether High is not going well for Melinda Sordino. She busted an end of a summer party by calling the cops, and now her friends and even strangers all hate her. So she stops trying, stops talking. She retreats into her head, and all the lies and hypocrisies of high school become magnified, leaving her with no desire to talk to anyone anyway. But it's not so comfortable in her head either. There's something banging around in there that she doesn't want to think about. She can't just go on like this forever. Eventually, she's going to have to confront the thing she's avoiding, the thing that happened at the party, the thing that nobody but her knows. She's going to have to speak the truth. This one, I've read this one.
Did you like it?
Yeah. It was hard. Hard read.
That would be a hard read.
Like
it
might sound like,
think how controversial that would all
be.
Ooh.
It just, really, I think all these, it's because they hit
home.
Maybe, yeah,
home resonates as a parent, too.
People are afraid to face it.
So we're to the top 3. Number 3 is All American Boys by Jason Reynolds and Brendan Keeley. It was banned and challenged for profanity, drug use, and alcoholism, and because it was thought to promote anti-police views, contain divisive topics, and be, quote, too much of a sensitive matter right now, unquote. It's a 2016 Coretta Scott King author honor book and recipient of the Walter Dean Myers Award for Outstanding Children's Literature. A little bit about it. 2 teens, one black, one white, grapple with the repercussions of a single violent act that leaves their school, their community, and ultimately the country bitterly divided by racial tension. That's a Jason Reynolds.
That's a good one.
And that would be one of those sensitive conversations. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Number 2, Stamped, Racism, Anti-Racism, and You by Ibram X. Kendi and Jason Reynolds. It was banned and challenged because of the author's public statements and because of claims that the book contains, quote, selective storytelling incidents, unquote, and does not encompass racism against all people. Just let that sink in. Okay, so this is not a history book. This is not a book about here and now, a book to help us better understand why we are where we are, a book about race. The construct of race has always been used to gain and keep power, to create dynamics that separate and silence. It's a remarkable reimagining of Dr. Ibram X. Kendi's National Book Award-winning Stamped from the beginning. So they took Stamped from the beginning and I guess kind of made it more for young adult, young readers. Takes you on a race journey from then to now, shows you why we feel how we feel and why the poison of racism lingers. It also proves that while racist ideas have always been easy to fabricate and distribute, they can also be discredited.
Seeing a theme throughout all
this. I was thinking that same thing, Tyler.
We'll get into it in a minute. We got one more here.
Yeah, there's a common theme.
But I think we can... I think Jason Reynolds was a great choice for Man Book Week, especially right now.
Yeah.
And what he's written.
He's got two of the top three.
Yeah. So number one is called George by Alex Gino. It was challenged, banned, and restricted for LGBTQIA plus content, conflicting with a religious viewpoint and not reflecting, quote, the values of our community, unquote. So I just want to talk about this one for a second. The novel tells the story of Melissa, a fourth grade girl who is struggling to be herself to the rest of the world. The rest of the world sees Melissa as George, a boy. Melissa uses the class play, Charlotte's Web, to show her mom that she is a girl by switching roles with her best friend and playing the part of Charlotte. So this was 2015, and recently, I think July of this year, the author made this statement. I made a mistake when I named my first published middle grade novel. A big mistake. I used a name for my main character that she doesn't like for herself, i.e. George, the title of this book. Instead of her actual name. My main character's name is Melissa, and I apologize to her, to the larger trans community, and to all of my readers for the error. I'm sorry. So in this statement, the author also encourages everyone to read the book and gives us permission to change the title to Melissa's story. So there's a lot of pictures of where people have taken a Sharpie and crossed out George and wrote Melissa. Mm-hmm. So that is number one right now, is George. Or Melissa's story. So I think we kind of hit on if we read any of these. I have not read George Melissa's story.
I have not either.
We have it in audio. So, and the other thing, I think, whenever I look at these lists, I always think how most of the titles, so there's a list, I think it's 100. Titles that honestly have stood the test of time. Mm-hmm. They're bestsellers and they're on the BAM over and over. So like To Kill a Mockingbird. If you go down a list, Harry Potter will be there.
Yeah. Oh, well, Harry Potter's always on there. Yeah.
The Bible.
Yeah. Yep.
Lots of Stephen King books are on there.
Judy Blume.
Mm-hmm. Judy Blume.
Dr. Seuss.
There was one author, Robert, and I'm going to say his name wrong. Cormier? I don't know. He wrote The Chocolate War.
Chocolate Wars, yeah.
He's on there a lot.
Yeah, so when I was in high school, we had our own little parent group trying to ban books. It was like sophomore year, and it was Chocolate War, Ordinary People.
Yeah.
They just didn't, and it was I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings. Mm. So we're all reading these, like, which all three of those books are now, like, the happiest books ever. And we're all reading them the same year in high school. Mm-hmm. But there's this group of parents that felt that like, we don't need all of this sad stuff at once. And we're like, it's English class. Protected. Like, we're like, yeah, like, you need to talk about it sometime. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So I remember that being an interesting time. And I think it kind of farted out. Nothing really happened with it, but still it was.
So they were just concerned you were reading
sad.
Sad books.
Yeah, like it was basically like, well, it's topics of suicide and just like depression books, and then we're all gonna get super sad and bummed out if we read these books in English class throughout the year. Yeah.
What they want you to read.
Yeah, but
I'm just curious.
The list was never presented to us like what they wanted. It just, we didn't want to read those. They just didn't want us to read those.
Not those books.
Yeah.
Interesting. Don't want you talking about deep topics.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
To the superficial.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So that became like a big deal. And I was on student newspaper at the Times, of course. One of the older kids just tore these parents apart in there.
But your newspaper was allowed to
go. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. So that was just funny.
Wow.
That was funny. So I do remember that as like my first initiation into the books that people don't want you to read kind of stuff. So.
That was one of my questions was, when you were younger, were you ever told you couldn't read, watch, or listen to something?
No.
I think watch more than.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Like, I mean, my parents definitely weren't into me watching like rated R movies.
No.
But read, I could pretty much read whatever. But I would read.
It wasn't like
in sixth grade. And,
yeah.
I could.
There's no off limit topics.
No. They always welcome, they always welcome the opportunity for anybody, if there's a book and I'm reading or anything.
Yeah, you're reading.
Say, oh, she's reading. Okay, this is good. But they weren't. My mom was a huge reader. My dad was not. So probably just didn't even really Yeah, probably more watch than anything.
I wasn't. Like, when we'd go to the library, I could go wherever, pick whatever out. Mm-hmm. And I don't remember a librarian or my mom, anybody saying. I do remember my mom warning me about Salem's Lot.
Sarah.
It wasn't for the satanic ritual. It was more of, you might be sad if you...
You're going to be scared.
Yeah.
It's the same spiel I gave my son.
Yeah, don't read that.
Same here.
You can read it. Just warning you. It's going to stay with you.
It's going to stick like glue.
You'll never look at your bedroom window the same. No.
I haven't read that one.
Oh.
See, I don't like horror movies that much. I haven't got into too many horror books.
I hate horror movies, but I
would you
love
like Stephen King books? Okay.
I am not a fan of horror movies either. And
can't stand the movies.
It seems like that younger generation loves those horror shows. So.
Maybe it's one I need to throw on there just for fun. Just
he's a good storyteller.
It's good. It's good.
Yeah. He's the one that you sit there for a minute and think, you look around where you're at and think. Could be happening right now.
Yeah, it could be real.
Yeah. So I'm with Leslie. I can't. So I do remember we had a long back and forth. It was more about watching. It was Nightmare on Elm Street. My dad. I think you should watch it. Back and forth. So they let me watch it. And I think my dad slept on my floor in my bedroom for like 3 nights after.
Because he wanted to or you wanted him to?
No, I watched it.
I hate that movie.
And he was like, you're not going to like it. This isn't going to end well. Well, yeah. I didn't sleep for like 3 days.
Whenever anybody still repeats that rhyme in that movie, I think it's that movie. That one, two. Oh my God, I can't even.
Yes.
It brings it all back, the horror of it all.
I hate that movie.
Yeah, I was encouraged to read whatever.
Yeah, I was too.
No restrictions. And I don't remember any major, like in high school, anybody, other parents or teachers saying I couldn't, or they didn't like what we were reading. Could have happened, but I don't remember that.
And some of the public libraries I worked in before I was here, we had one challenge, never banned, but it was a graphic novel, and just they didn't like the content and felt it should be moved to the adult. The library as that had like a children's side and adult side, and they wanted it moved. It went to our board, who said it's fine. And then another kind of challenge, it was more of a concern, was a cover of a book that was out on display. Tad racy.
Romance novel?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it wasn't the content, it was just the visual cover of the book. So they wanted us to turn it around, and I'm like, that book's not going to be out there very long anyway. Don't worry about it. It will be snatched up in minutes.
That's funny.
No, so I think those are really the only ones I've had to work through. I do know in Iowa, the Iowa Library Association has an intellectual freedom committee, and there have been challenges, bans. I think for the most part, the libraries that this happened in, if there was action taken, it was that they were moved maybe out of the children's to a different section. And I think there have been some challenges to book lists and required reading in schools.
I think it's interesting how many awards all the top 10 won, though, when you really look at it.
Yeah.
I know a couple of them. If you look at some of there's a couple of websites I've kind of collected authors' responses to being on the list. And I think, you know, my opinion, when you're on the list, you're
making
provoking
waves.
Thought and discussion, and I think that's your book's doing what it needs to do.
Exactly. What you see with those books, though, that's the people trying to ban them is trying to keep information quiet or keep it out of the, I mean, because that's throughout history. So the first podcast, that shorter one that we listened to, that one talks about like the history of it all the way back to where Emperor, what I can't think of his name, just burned all the books because history started with him, kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah. There's nothing
before. Yeah, so I think it's just the silence of information is what you see in these that keep, yeah, keep you all down.
We picked two podcasts for this library chat, and they focus on banned book week and banned books. And the first one was, is the story behind and banned books. And on this episode, the story behind podcast host Emily Prokop takes listeners on a journey dating all the way back to 2010 BC, detailing the origin of banned books. The episode's only 12 minutes long from start to finish, but it was packed with interesting information. And I love that she included the scene, if you're a Parks and Recreation
fan. Oh, yeah.
Fan,
oh,
that was
oh,
yeah. fun. And the time capsule.
Yeah.
And
yep,
the Twilight book was good. And then the other podcast was Part-Time Genius, Why Were These Banned? So if you already know the history behind Banned Books Week, but want to hear more about why certain books have been challenged or banned, on this episode of Part-Time Genius, hosts Will and Mingo cover many of the stories of the banned books, from the mystery behind the Wicked Bible to why Where's Waldo is banned in prisons. So I really liked that quick history of it.
Me too, yeah.
Because I think we all know it's been a thing since 2010 BC.
And they talked about, just kind of going off what you were saying, Tyler, that, you know, having your book banned as an author, there's so much conversation around it that it really heightens the interest of the book and people really enjoy.
Yeah, it kind of does the opposite of what the people are wanting.
Oh, yeah.
It does.
Because you make a big deal out of it, especially if you're a kid and a parent makes a big deal out of it. You're like, oh, now I really want it. Now I really want to see what that book's about.
Yeah.
Like, so that's the thing, but it does that, you know, too. So
it's kind of like, don't look in the box, but you're curious. What's in that box? I'm so curious about what's in that box.
It would be interesting to see book sales before and after a book gets on a list somewhere. Like, once, just to see how much, if it does shoot up or by how much, which defeats the whole purpose of I'm trying to get rid of it, which makes it funny. That's why it's.
Yeah, and some of the reasons in the other one, just at why they're challenged banned, does make me pause and think, what? But I can tell you, Captain Underpants series came up, and that my son loved.
Yeah. My son did.
My son's still on the bookshelf.
They're still on the bookshelf.
And I tell you, the fact that that beat out the number of challenges of 50 Shades of Grey just made me laugh.
Oh, right.
It did make me laugh, too.
But no, Captain Underpants was. And then the whole whole debacle with Brown Bear went to you.
Oh, my gosh.
That one's always been on our shelves, and the fact that they mixed up the authors' names.
Yes.
And so Brown Bear was banned for a bit. Kind of makes me think, what knee-jerk reactions are, you know.
No, yeah.
Because I will say, going back to public library days, so if there was a challenge, there's paperwork that had to be filled out by the individual challenging the book, and one of the I think it might have been our first question after your contact information was, have you read the entire book? Because our library board wanted to know, you know, did you read this?
Or did you get to the first curse word and then fill out the form?
that's
you heard someone else read it and they didn't like it.
Yeah. I like that that's asked, though. That's great.
Sure.
I did think, too, that Part-Time Genius podcast kind of got into what the publishers consider and when they're deciding to publish and how to publish. Because what was the book they talked about? Ulysses?
Yeah.
And a couple of those other ones.
So I looked up Ulysses. I never heard of that book. And like, But, like, is it really that challenging to read? Because that's what I just kept seeing that everyone talks about, like, how
hard it was.
Eloquent it's been written, that it's just, like, a really hard book to get through, even.
It's so old. I'm guessing it's got some, odd language.
Yeah.
Not a quick, easy read.
Okay. That's
have you read it, Sarah?
Yes, a long time ago.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Thanks.
I just thought the story of him trying to get it no. to that certain judge, like all that story was crazy, and they had the guy that was trying to get caught with it, and he just was like demanding that they arrest or that they take the bag from him. They're like, dude, go. Like,
just get out
please
of here.
Go away. It is 1,000 degrees in here.
But it is curious that the publishers, you know, weigh that, the popularity, because it's controversial to, I mean,
yeah.
I think I asked all my questions. Any other history covered in the podcast surprise you?
The Ulysses story was funny. I just really liked that one. There's a lot going on with that one.
I did copy down a couple of the other ones that I thought they weren't in the top 10, but were curious that they were challenged or banned. And that was, I think we talked about, Captain in Her Pants. And Where's Waldo?
Mm-hmm.
It was banned.
Yep.
It was one of the pictures.
Well, it was a specific Waldo book. It was like Christmas. It was like a Christmas book. Yeah. Like, it was just such a random one.
And then A Light in the Attic.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Because of the dishes.
Yeah.
Well, Where the Sidewalk Ends the Line, yeah, it was banned for promoting cannibalism and promoting that children break dishes. And I'm like, I know exactly what poem that is.
Yeah, it's hilarious.
It's how not to have to dry the dishes.
Yeah.
And it's so funny, though, because some of the reasons why they banned a book, mm-hmm. you think as you're hearing, you know, reading about it, it's like, why was that banned? And then when they talk about why it's banned, you're thinking, okay, maybe I see it now. Maybe I don't understand that. But
and they
maybe.
Said it should have been The Giving Tree because they made it selfish.
Yeah, it's like, okay, and it's all about your perception being persuaded. Okay, well, maybe I guess I see it that way, right?
And then we have the Red Riding Hood because she was depicted as carrying a bottle of wine in her basket.
Really? Yeah.
But that's like a story that is literally, which I don't think she ever, but that's a story that's like thousands of years old.
Yeah, that goes
that has been depicted 1,000 times
back, like,
over.
When everybody drank wine. All
yeah, exactly. It's like Scandinavian folktale,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You didn't have any water. No water was sanitary, so you just had to drink booze all the time, right?
Wow.
Here's Lord of the Flies. For being demoralizing, and it implies that man is little more than an animal.
People have too much time on their
hands. Yeah. I know to really sit and critique like that. I mean,
and I liked Alice's Adventures in Wonderland. So in the 60s, because of the mushroom and hookah imagery reflected the drug culture of the era. Later in the 90s, in New Hampshire, for promoting sexual fantasies. And Chinese officials in the 30s perceived a problem with the book's depiction of talking animals, considering it disastrous to put animals and human beings on the same level.
Is it China or Japan?
Too much.
Let's see, how many programs is China put out now of talking animals? Yeah, that's on Netflix right now that you could watch.
That's true.
Then we have Fahrenheit 451, anti-government advocacy. Yeah. We have the dictionary, Merriam-Webster dictionary, because they included the definition of oral sex.
See, it does. It makes you go, so what?
So this one, this next one, I laughed because my husband, so Where the Wild Things Are, to this day, since he was little, that book has just freaked him out. Like, can't do it. And so I had to tell him that at one point it was banned for traumatizing children.
So you are legitimate being scared.
With the thought that a mother as a primary caregiver could send her child to bed without breakfast. But that's not what traumatized him. It's just creepy monsters, I guess.
Creepy.
Wasn't that his mom was going to abandon him and not feed him anymore?
Is this the same person who doesn't like Parent Trap because of the twin?
Oh, yeah. They are kind of scary, though, I think. I will say
that. They're going back to Alice in Wonderland.
Alice in Wonderland.
What I think, if you read, you know, when you went through that list, how I think a lot of it was going on in the culture effects when the book gets banned. It's almost like they're looking for a scapegoat. So in the 60s, it was psychedelics and mushrooms and that stuff. And then in the 90s, it was sexual exploitation. Or not, it was just like... Sexual fantasies. Yeah. So it's just like seeing these different phases of what culture is going through, and they're just applying that to whatever evil they can find to put it on. So I thought that was interesting with that
it
one.
It evolves. It's almost like criteria changes. Whatever it fits. It metamorphoses and changes, kind of.
And I forgot one. The Diary of Anne Frank was banned because it might be depressing for young readers. Maybe that was your group.
Yeah, maybe it was.
That might have been one of them that was on the list. I can't remember. It might have been on there. I definitely read it. So
because we wouldn't want to talk about that.
That would be sad.
No, sad.
So
I read that book when I was young.
If you want to know more about Banned Book Week, check out bannedbooksweek.org. There's a full list on there, and there's a lot of information about where challenges and bans have taken place, whether it's public library, school, those kind of things. So any last thoughts before I just want to wrap up with a thought I have about all this.
Just my last thought is my reading list has expanded by quite a few books after reading the most challenged books in the last decade and the last year. So I'll be reading some more books coming up.
I was wondering how many were on the Great American Read.
Mm. That are now
banned. Those 100 that
have been challenged.
That's a good question. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Probably quite a few.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm like, I bet it is a good percent. Mm-hmm.
It is.
Because I think of the titles that were on them.
How long are books challenged before they become banned? Does it just depends, I guess?
It fizzles out, or if...
Well, they have to... So how usually, in theory, it works is the challenge has to be formal. So like at the public libraries I worked at, you had to fill out paperwork to explain your concern, what you want done about it, and then that would go to the library board or whoever in your organization is responsible for those policies, and then the board can act on it. Usually the board is the final, in a public library, the final say, but sometimes it does get pushed up, I suppose, to the city or whoever's the municipality. So if no action's taken by the board, what happened with ours is that's that. You can challenge legally, things like that. So, but sometimes, unfortunately, a board or a school administration will decide to remove it from a book list or the library.
Wow. For political reasons or some other reason too, on top of the
in the world,
the merit of the challenge itself.
Donations are at stake.
So I really enjoy Banned Book Week. I like looking at these lists and thinking about like how many on the Great American Read. It also forces me to step back from our day to day and think about and remember why libraries and the work is important. And there's two things that I've always held close since library school. It was kind of taught to us. Was the Ranganathan's 5 Laws of Library Science and the American Library Association's Library Bill of Rights. So just really quick, I think Ranganathan, still to this day, was the father of Indian library science and developed the 5 Laws of Library Science. So 1931 is when these came to be. And I think when you think of banned books and the role of libraries in ensuring people have access, I think these really hit home. So 5 Laws, books are for use. Every reader, his or her book, or books for all. Number 3, every book, his or her reader, save time of the reader, and the library is a growing organism. So
true.
Yes. So our library, as well as the National Library Service for the Blind and Print Disabled, and Library of Congress, try to apply the American Library Association's Library of Bill of Rights to what we do as well, and a lot of those do hit on kind of the censorship and... reducing access to books, I guess. So a couple of those are books and other library resources should be provided for the interest, information, and enlightenment of all people of the community the library serves. Material should not be excluded because of origin, background, or views of those contributing to their creation. Number 2, libraries should provide materials and information presenting all view all points of view on a current and historical issues. Material should not be prescribed or removed because of partisan or doctrinal disapproval. Number three, libraries should challenge censorship in the fulfillment of their responsibilities to provide information and enlightenment. Libraries should cooperate with all persons and groups concerned with resisting abridgment of free expression and free access to ideas. So those are just a couple on the Library Bill of Rights. So I think that's our job. And what's lovely about a library is you can check it out or don't
check it out. That's the greatest part about it. Yeah.
And you have that ability too. You're a parent to make those decisions for your family. But I do think it's so important to read these to get the different perspectives and the different, and to have those tough, kind of a starting point for difficult conversations. Mm-hmm.
I agree.
Such a growing opportunity for all ages, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Any last thoughts on banned books? They used to have shirts that say, I'm with the band.
Oh, how was it spelled?
B-A-N-N-E-D. Not B-A-N-D.
Like the rock band.
Not the rock band. No.
Okay. Band. Oh, that's cute. Last thoughts?
Good.
Oh, welcome back. It's good to have you back.
Thanks. I miss it. Well, thank you everyone for joining me today for our September Library Chat episode. If you missed any of our earlier episodes, the podcast, along with the book list, is available on our library blog, iowalibrary.blog. You can also find episodes from other library podcasts, library news, and Braille Bits on the blog as well. So thanks for listening, and we will chat with you next month.
See you later.
See ya.
Bye.